Chapter 21. Sean said goodbye to Katrina. There were no tears. She understood necessity and helped him to a quiet acceptance of it. They stood a long while beside their wagon, holding each other, their lips almost touching as they whispered together. And then Sean called for his horse. Helubi followed him, leading the pack horse, when he crossed the Sabi. And when Sean reached the far bank, he turned and looked back. Katrina was still standing by their wagon, and behind her hovered Embi Janey. In her bonnet and green dress, she looked very young. Sean waved his hat over his head, and then set off towards the mountains. The forests dwindled into grassland as they climbed, and each night was colder than the last. Then in its turn the grassland conceded to the sheer bluffs and misty gorges of the mountain back. Sean and Helubi struggled upwards, following the game trails, losing them, turning back from impassable cliffs, scouting for a pass, leading the horses over the steep pitches, and at night sitting close to the fire and listening to the baboons barking in the cranes around them. Then suddenly, in the middle of a morning that was bright as a cut diamond, they were at the top. To the west the land lay spread out like a map, and the distance they had travelled in a week was pathetically small. By straining his eyes and his imagination, Sean could make out the dark green belt of the Sabi watercourse. To the east, the land merged with the blueness that was not the sky, and for a while he failed to recognize it. Then, "The sea!" he shouted. And Helubi laughed with him, for it was a godlike feeling to stand above the world. They found an easier route down the eastern slopes and followed it onto the coastal plain. At the bottom of the mountains they came to a native village. To see cultivated lands and human dwellings again was a small shock to Sean. He'd come to accept the fact that he and his retinue were the only people left on earth. The entire population of the village fled when they saw him. Mother snatched up a child in each hand and ran as fast as their menfolk. Memories of the slave traders still persisted in this part of Africa. Within 2 minutes of his arrival, Sean again had the feeling that he was the only person left on earth. With the contempt of the Zulu for every other tribe in Africa, Helubi shook his head sadly. "Monkeys," he said. They dismounted and tied their horses under the big tree that was the centre of the village. They sat in the shade and waited. The huts were grass beehives, their roofs blackened with smoke, and a few chickens picked and scratched at the bare earth between them. Half an hour later, Sean saw a black face watching him from the edge of the bush, and he ignored it. Slowly the face emerged, followed closely by a reluctant body. With a twig, Sean went on drawing patterns in the dust between his feet. Out of the corner of his eye, he watched the hesitant approach. It was an old man, with stalk-thin legs, and one eye glazed into a white jelly by tropical ophthalmia. Sean concluded that his fellows had picked him to act as ambassador, on the ground that of all their members he would be the least loss. Sean looked up and gave him a radiant smile. The old man froze, and then his lips twitched into a sickly grin of relief. Sean stood up, dusted his hands on the sides of his breeches, and went to shake the old man's hand. Immediately the bush around them swarmed with people. They poured back into the village, jabbering and laughing. They crowded round Shaun and felt his clothing, peered into his face, and exclaimed delightedly. It was obvious that most of them had never seen a white man before. Shaun was trying to shake off One Eye, who still had a possessive hold on Shaun's right hand, and Halubi leaned disdainfully against the tree, taking no part in the welcome. One Eye ended the confusion by screeching at them in a voice rusty with age. The courage he had displayed earlier now earned its reward. At his command, a dozen of the younger women scampered off and came back with a carved wooden stool and 6 earthenware pots of native beer. By the hand on which he had not, for an instant, relaxed his grip, One Eye led Shaun to the stool and made him sit. The rest of the villagers squatted in a circle round him, and one of the girls brought the biggest beer pot to Shaun. The beer was yellow, and had bubbled sullenly. Shaun's stomach shied at the sight of it. He glanced at One Eye, who was watching him anxiously. He lifted the pot and sipped. Then he smiled with surprise. It was creamy and pleasantly tart. "Good," he said. "Good," chorused the villagers. "Your health," said Shaun. "Health," said the village as one man, and Shaun drank deep. One of the girls took another beer pot to Halubi. She knelt in front of him and shyly offered it. She had a plaited grass string round her waist, from which a small kilt hung down in front, but her stern was completely exposed, and her bosoms were the size and shape of ripe melons. Halubi looked at them until the girl hung her head. Then he lifted the beer pot. Shaun wanted a guide to the nearest Portuguese settlement. He looked at One Eye and said, "Town? Portuguese?" One Eye was almost overcome by Shaun's attention. He grabbed Shaun's hand again before he could pull it away and shook it vigorously. "Stop that, you bloody old fool," said Shaun irritably. And One Eye grinned and nodded. Then, without releasing Shaun's hand, he began an impassioned speech to the other villagers. Shaun, meanwhile, was searching his memory for the name of one of the Portuguese ports on this coast. "Nova Sofala," he shouted as he got it. One Eye broke off his speech abruptly and stared at Shaun. "Nova Sofala," said Shaun again, pointing vaguely towards the east. And One Eye showed his gums in his biggest grin yet. "Nova Sofala," he agreed, pointing with authority. And then it was only a matter of minutes before it was understood between them that he would act as guide. Halubi saddled the horses. One Eye fetched a grass sleeping mat and a battle axe from one of the huts. Shaun mounted and looked at Halubi to do the same. But Halubi was acting strangely. "Yes," Shaun asked with resignation. "What is it?" "Nkosi." Halubi was looking at the branches of the tree above them. "The old one can lead the pack horse." "You can take it in turns," said Shaun. Halubi coughed and transferred his eyes to the fingernails of his left hand. "Nkosi, is it possible that you will return to this village on the way back from the sea?" "Yes, of course," said Shaun. "We'll have to leave the old one here. Why do you ask?" "I have a thorn in my foot, Nkosi. It gives me pain. If you do not require me, I will wait here for you. Perhaps the thorn wound will have healed by then." Halubi looked up at the tree again and shuffled his feet with embarrassment. Shaun had not noticed him limping, and he was puzzled as to why Halubi should start malingering now. Then Halubi couldn't stop himself from glancing at where the girl stood in the circle of villagers. Her kilt was very small, and from the sides gave her no cover at all. Understanding came to Sean, and he chuckled. "The thorn you have is painful, but it's not in your foot." Harubi shuffled his feet again. "You said they were monkeys." "Have you changed your mind?" Sean asked.
"Nkosi, they are indeed monkeys," Harubi sighed, "but very friendly monkeys."
"Stay then, but do not weaken yourself too much. We have mountains to cross on the way home."